The Apple ebook price fixing trial continues, and we bring you the latest news from a Manhattan courtroom. Joining us on Beyond the Book this week, as he always does, is Andrew Albany, senior writer for Publishers Weekly. And Andrew, welcome back.
Greetings, Chris.
I understand you've been sitting on a hard court bench throughout the week, and we've seen your reporting from the court. The most recent, of course, is the testimony just yesterday, Thursday, from Eddie Q, who is a senior figure at Apple.
You're right on both counts. Those courtroom benches are unforgiving. And yes, yesterday, Apple Senior Vice President Eddie Q finally took the stand in the Apple ebook trial. The courtroom was packed, as you might imagine. This is a key player in Apple's digital strategy. So you had a lot of major media there. It was almost like, you know, going to church on Christmas and seeing a lot of unfamiliar faces.
I love that idea. Right.
People were suddenly very interested in the ebook trial with Eddie Q.
Absolutely. Apple does draw a crowd wherever it goes.
They certainly did yesterday with Eddie Q, for sure. Q was, you know, good on the stand. He was actually pretty forthcoming. There were not a lot of I don't recalls, unlike other witnesses. And he seemed to want to set up the idea that if there was a conspiracy of any kind, it wasn't Apple's conspiracy. In the beginning of his testimony, U.S. Attorney Lawrence Biederman showed him what he likes to call the spider web, which is this chart that he whips out that shows all the various phone calls between the publisher CEOs that took place over the course of the Apple negotiations. And he asked Q, were you aware of any of these calls? And Q said he was not, and that no one at Apple was aware that the publishers were communicating in any way. And then Biederman asked him, if he had known, would he have been upset? And Q said, yes, he absolutely would have been upset, because that would have hurt his ability to get the best deal for Apple and the best deal for his customers. So right off the bat, Q tried to portray this as if indeed there was a conspiracy, it wasn't his. There were also some really nice moments from Q in which he sort of talked about the genesis of the ebook store the iBook store at Apple. He revealed, for one thing, that Steve Jobs had long stood in the way of the iBook store because he felt that devices that Apple currently had before the iPad weren't good enough to offer an optimal digital reading experience. But with the iPad in the pipeline, that thinking would change. And then Steve Jobs actually, became very personally vested in the completion of the iBook store. He thought it was really cool. And at one point, Q said that he was, with Jobs' health failing, he was determined not to fail, that the iPad was very important to Steve. This was probably one of the last things that he was going to do at Apple, and Q really wanted to get it done. So that was kind of a moving, nice little moment and a nice insight into Steve Jobs, which I think probably most of the major media were there to hear.
Andrew, it's interesting because, you know, on the one hand, we're hearing how much Steve Jobs cared about the user experience, and on the other hand, and in testimony, U.S. attorney basically made the point that when it came to consumers and how much they paid for the books, Apple didn't really care.
That's a very good point. And at one point, Biederman introduced an email from a college student who had just sent a note off to Steve Jobs saying that, hey, you know, Apple's entry into the ebook world meant that I'm paying more for my reading and I'm a college student and I don't have enough money. Why are you charging more money for ebooks? And he said, I don't expect a reply to this. I just wanted you to know. And Jobs actually did reply. And he said, it's not us. It's the publishers who are charging more money. And that kicked off a neat little exchange. But you're right. Biederman did portray Apple as caring mostly, in fact, only about its price competition with Amazon, with the other retailers. It didn't care that its entry into the market was going to actually raise ebook prices. Apple knew ebook prices were going to go up when they cut this deal. So that was a very interesting moment in Q's testimony yesterday.
Well, indeed, and you know, the figure that's not in the courtroom, if you can call it a figure, is of course the corporation Amazon, and yet they came up this week in testimony. HarperCollins' CEO Brian Murray was recalling, or mostly not recalling, events going back to 2009 and the early 2010. But there was a tremendous sort of bumper sticker quote that came out regarding his boss Rupert Murdoch.
Yeah, Rupert Murdoch wanted to screw Amazon.
Surprise, surprise.
Which is a really wonderful headline, I have to say. But you know, it's really, you know, that all revolves around the fact that on the week of January 20th, 2010, Amazon, right in the middle of all of these tense negotiations that were going on with Apple and the publishers, decided to change its self-publishing platform. And they offered an agency model to authors directly that was very much similar to the agency model that Apple and the publishers were negotiating. And that incensed publishers. And not only Murdoch, but also David Shanks was on record of being very upset at this, because this is what publishers saw as what they were really negotiating for. They saw Amazon as attempting to disintermediate them entirely from the publishing business, eventually taking their Kindle platform and going right to the authors themselves, offering them 70% to publish direct with Amazon. So that really sort of kicked up negotiations with Apple a notch during that whole week.
Well, indeed. And so we mentioned the testimony of CEO Brian Murray. We've heard from a number of other senior executives at the Big Six. But we found out that the one party, again, not involved, won't be testifying, and that's Random's McIntosh.
Yeah, that's a very interesting development in court at the end of the day Wednesday. U.S. attorney stood up and said, Judge, we're not going to be calling Random House Chief Operating Officer Madeline McIntosh to the stand. And Apple attorneys had a fit. They were looking forward to the chance to have Madeline McIntosh testify. Now, it's important, I think, because McIntosh comes up quite a few times in the government's case. Allegedly, she's a former Amazon employee, and she's friends with some of the Amazon employees that have given testimony in this case. And she testified that at a dinner, and Laura Porco from Amazon testified at a dinner, that she revealed that Random House was under pressure from the other publishers to move to an agency model for books. It's kind of a key assertion in the government's case. But the judge ruled that McIntosh had given plenty of testimony. There was not much material dispute about her testimony. And she decided that, no, McIntosh did not need to be in court to talk anymore about this, to take a beating from Apple attorney Oren Snyder. And, you know, Oren Snyder could have put Madeline McIntosh on his witness list when they were planning the case, but he didn't. So he sort of lost his chance. But in another interesting move, Marcus Dole, the CEO of Random House, was also pulled off the witness board. Now, he would have been very interesting. I was actually looking forward to hearing Dole, because Dole could have said, not that he would have, but he could have shed light on whether or not Random House chose not to get involved with this plan, not only because it didn't make economic sense for them, but because maybe he felt like it wasn't quite above board. Maybe there was some communication between publishers. Maybe Dole was a little uncomfortable jumping into this. We'll never know now. Dole's not going to be testifying.
Well, what is interesting, Andrew, and you mentioned the so-called spider's web that the U.S. attorney brings out when it's convenient for him. There is so much documentation, both emails and records of conversations. It sounds like the NSA was listening all the time. I mean, we've got so much on the record already that the testimony, and you've made this point before, is almost perfunctory.
The documents and the evidence are going to decide this case. There hasn't really been anything on the witness stand that's changed anything materially in this case. And you mentioned the evidence. I mean, I'll tell you, most of the witnesses just can't recall. I don't know. It was 3 years ago. I can't recall anything. But the evidence recalls, and it paints a picture. And nobody has really been able to sort of knock any of those key pieces of evidence out entirely. So that is what the case is going to come down to. And I'll mention one other brief thing about this. Eddie Q, in his testimony yesterday, testified that, you know, he had no idea that the publishers were talking to one another, and that would have made his negotiation more difficult, and he would have been very angry had he known that was happening. Well, earlier in the case, Amazon proved that that was happening when they were negotiating their agency models, and they even played a voicemail from Tim McCall, a Penguin executive in court. Now, this is a voicemail that Amazon kept from January of 2010. So these things can live. But in that voicemail, Tim McCall said, hey, we're hearing through the grapevine that you offered this specific term to another publisher. We'd like that term too. If that had been left on Eddie Q's voicemail, he would have been very upset.
Indeed. And, you know, it's a lesson to everybody, not just publishing executives, to watch what they say in voicemail and email. So we've come to the end of week two, Andrew, heading into the third week of testimony. What can we expect to happen, and where do you think this is all going?
in terms of where I think this is all going, I think it's all going according to the DOJ playbook at this time. You know, I think a lot of media reports are still parsing each witness as they come and go. And there are some interesting statements to sort of throw out there in isolation. But as to how the trial is going, you have to sort of look at it according to the playbook. And Apple's playbook, their defense looks like this. First, they have to prove there was no conspiracy. Apple did not coordinate any actions. Second, they have to establish that Amazon actually liked the agency model and had considered using it before Apple even came along. And third, they want to show that Apple's entry into the ebook business was actually pro-competitive, that ebook prices dropped and that there was more competition. So we know, as of now, that Cote's tentative view, based on the evidence she's seen, was, and three settlements that she's approved, was that the DOJ will likely prevail in proving its case. You know, she even said so. So the question is, how is Apple going? How is Apple doing in knocking her off that, changing her mind? Well, on point two, whether or not Amazon liked the agency model, in my opinion, Apple has failed. Amazon testimony and publisher testimony clearly showed that Amazon wanted no part of the agency model. On the last count, whether or not Apple's entry was pro-competitive, that also seems to be a fail at this point, because the expert witnesses have shown that the idea that average ebook prices fell after Apple came in is not the appropriate thing to look at. As one expert witness pointed out, if Ford and Toyota and Chevy got together and fixed prices for luxury cars, the average price of cars could still go down because people might be buying more small cars to fight high gas prices. But that would not disprove that there was a conspiracy to fix prices in one part of the market. So it's really going to all come down to the conspiracy charge. And a lot of that is going to hinge on Eddie Q's testimony, which will continue on Monday. Did Apple share information? Were they an information conduit? Now, Q has already said that he did share some general information and that he was a conduit, letting the other publishers know that, yes, I've got one, I've got two, I've got three. But he didn't share any specific details of negotiations. And publishers didn't seem to know what their other publishing partners were specifically negotiating. However, Q also noted that he let them know that Apple was offering materially the same terms to each publisher. So whether there was a conspiracy or not, whether it was the publishers or not, Q's going to have a lot to say about that on Monday. And I'm not steeped enough in antitrust law to know whether Apple's conduct rises to the level of an anti-competitive conspiracy, but clearly there was some coordination involved.
It's fascinating stuff, and we appreciate your help in keeping us straight. Andrew Albanese, senior writer for Publishers Weekly, he'll be back in that courtroom. We hope you can sneak in a little cushion for yourself for next weekend.
My pleasure. Thanks, Chris.
All right. Take care. And we should tell you that Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as images, movies, and television shows. Follow Beyond the Book on Twitter. Find us on Facebook. And subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at the Copyright Clearance Center website, copyright.com. Just click on Beyond the Book. Our engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.